Yeah.
Ever since.
Ever since.
Yeah.
We'll call the Senate Tax Committee to order for March 25th, 2014. We will start with Senator Wigger, Senate File 2689. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate File 2689 is a tax increment financing proposal from the City of North St. Paul. I know most of you are aware of the city. It's about 8 miles northeast of here. It's the home of the largest snowman, the oldest bar in Minnesota, Newman's, also the best pizza place, the Village Pizza. So we welcome you to the community if you have not had a chance to be there lately. The community has worked a great deal in the redevelopment of the area, and before us today is a proposal to seek a TIF area where they were not able to generate the development needed within the first few years. Instead of having it revert to an economic development authority, which the statute would call for, they seek an extension. And I have the mayor of North St. Paul, Mike Keene, who will give some brief comments as to the need, and the city manager, Jason Ziemer, will follow with any needed detail regarding the proposal. So I'd like to introduce the mayor of North St. Paul, Mike Keene.
Mayor Keene, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, it's a distinct honor to be here, and thank you very much for hearing our bill today. As you know, Senator Wigger pointed out, North St. Paul is a freestanding city that became a suburb of, but it was originally a freestanding committee for many, many years. And we're only 3.1 square miles. So economic development is extremely important. We're trying to redevelop the town. We're trying to grow our tax base. We are, in Ramsey County, one of the poster childs of local government aid. So it's extremely important that we grow our tax base. And this is a rare opportunity. This site was the former site of the Anchor Building Block Company. It encompasses approximately 20 acres, which, again, for our small town, it's a significant parcel of land. It also sits on the intersection of Highway 36 and McKnight Road, which about 5 years ago, that highway stretch was upgraded, and that's now a full highway interchange there. So we feel it's very important that we have the opportunity as an economic development tool that we have the TIF. There's lots of infrastructure, if development occurs there publicly, that will have to be improved on and other things. So at this time, I just wanted to give you that quick overview of how important it is for the future of our city for economic development purposes, and I'm going to have our city manager, Mr. Ziemer, give more detail.
Thank you, Mayor. Mr. Ziemer.
Hi, my name is Jason Ziemer. I'm the city manager for North St. Paul. Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to be here, as the mayor stated. As he said, this is a significant site for the community. It's roughly 20 acres. We did provide kind of a map to give you an idea of where that's located, immediately adjacent to Highway 36. So from a business perspective, it's got location, location, location written all over it. And it's really divided into two sites. This site was part of a $100,000 Metropolitan Council regional planning grant as it relates to assisting the community in putting together a master redevelopment plan for the site. So we're looking at a mix of both commercial, retail, office, as well as residential in this area. The site is not yet a district. It was a set up to be a TIF district, but the city had 3 years in which to enact and create the district. Unfortunately, 3 years expires in September. We've had some movement on the site recently from the development community that's really interested in looking at a project on the site, and we have been in discussions with the development firm to make something happen. Unfortunately, the timetable to be able to put that together, that redevelopment opportunity to create the redevelopment district will expire in September before we're able to really put the plans together for that project. Part of the reason why we need the extension is because we're looking to create this as a redevelopment district, which has a longer term than the economic development district, from the standpoint that the public improvements on the site related to traffic, infrastructure, just general site improvements are very significant on the site, and actually they actually exceed what we would generate in TIF over the life of that district, especially as a redevelopment district. So it is critically important that we're able to be able to have the financing to be able to make whatever project goes in there a successful project, not only on behalf of development, but also on behalf of the community. So it's our goal, obviously, to use the increment as minimal as possible, but in order with this site, the location of the site, the needs of the site in terms of making those public improvements, having this assistance available to us is really going to be important going forward. So we are seeking the ability to extend that district out beyond the three-year limit. I think it was either 3 to 5 years is what it stated in the bill.
And Mr. Ziemer, so this parcel would have all qualified other than the building was torn down before the three-year time period started?
Correct. Yep. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the city went through the whole process of establishing the findings and determining that the buildings that were on the site were substandard. So it's met all the conditions and the requirements that would have allowed it to be a redevelopment district. It was just what we ran into was just the recession and all sorts of things that really kind of prohibited the site to move forward as it relates to making development happen on this site. So it does meet all the conditions and requirements.
Okay. Thank you. Questions, members? Seeing none, Senator Wieger, anything else?
No.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Wieger. We will lay Senate File 2689 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Rood. Welcome, Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Today I'm bringing forward Senate File 2743. It's the Baxter Isle Drive Tax Increment Financing. The good news in Baxter is that we're having growing pains. Before I would say that that's the bad news, but we haven't had a really good, healthy market for a while, and so that's exciting news that we're moving forward with our projects and that we are getting a more healthy economy. Baxter has been working very hard for a solution. We have a wonderful medical campus going on in Brainerd. If you come into town, you'll see that we have a lot of wonderful new buildings, and we need infrastructure and access to that. So Baxter is working hard for a solution. At first, we came forward with a bonding proposal, but we realized that bonding dollars are limited, and we think this is a better solution. So with that, I have with me our finance director from Baxter, Jerry Vasinek, and he's going to explain this for you.
Welcome, Mr. Vasinek.
Thank you, Chair and members. The Baxter Isle Drive TIF district was created in 2010-2011 as part of the jobs program, the bill that was passed to spur economic development and jobs in the state. To date, we've created a little over a $13 million investment in a parcel that was built by Essential Health. They built a new clinic at the site, and they created 140 construction jobs during that time period, as well as 60 permanent clinic positions. Part of the reason for them deciding to build in this location was the completion of Isle Drive. Isle Drive will serve as a frontage road to the interregional corridor of Highway 371, connecting Highland Scenic Drive or County Road 48 to Glory Road. Those are the only two signalized intersections along that stretch of the highway. We've had a little bit of issues trying to complete the construction of that street. One of the hurdles we've had is after initial study, it was determined with a traffic study, a joint traffic study that was completed with the city and the county, that a roundabout would need to be located at the terminus of Isle Drive at County Road 48. That was an additional $1.8 million project cost that we hadn't anticipated. As Senator Root pointed out, we were looking at some bonding dollars to help facilitate part of that construction. Recognizing that there are a lot of priorities in the bonding bill, we realized that this might be a better alternative that doesn't cost the state money. It's something that we can accomplish through the tax increment project for a process through the project that we already have in place. One of the other challenges that we have with the development of this site is it does traverse a piece of MnDOT property that's being reserved potentially for a future interchange. So there's no assessments that we can allocate to that portion of the project. In addition to that, it is located in an area near a lake, so there's no development that will be occurring on the one side. That'll be preserved for conservation purposes, as well as the city currently has a trail through there that we're looking at potentially extending the Paul Bunyan Strait Trail that would extend down to Camp Ripley through that site. So it's something the state's been interested in as well. That would preserve that corridor for conservation purposes. I guess it's probably best if I just draw your attention to my handout, I guess, on the map that I have in showing the area. We're proposing to add two new parcels to the district to help facilitate some of that construction. It's anticipated to only generate about $300,000 to $400,000 of additional increment. As I mentioned, the roundabout cost alone is $1.8 million, as well as some of the MnDOT costs that we're unable to assess. Along with that, one of the reasons for this bill, at least that we looked at initially, was the addition of the green area. You can see the one parcel that was previously included in the TIF district due, unfortunately, to an inadvertent error. When the city platted that property late last year, it added some additional area. That's the hatch mark that's showing on the upper and right-hand side of that one parcel to the parcel due to the fact that the city needed some additional right-of-way for the street to make that project still viable for the proposed medical office building that's looking to locate there right now. Due to the fact that that parcel was replatted and additional property was included in it, the parcel was knocked out of the TIF district due to the statutes, and that, as I mentioned, that was inadvertent. And the goal, I guess, with this bill is to add that parcel back in so that we can generate the increment that's needed for that parcel to help pay for the roundabout as well as for the other project costs associated with extending the street.
And do you know which one of these tax parcel numbers that one is?
That is parcel 03412, the first one that's listed in the bill on line 1.11.
Thank you.
So as I mentioned, we're just, we're looking to kind of continue spurring the economic development in the area. We've got a medical clinic that's kind of being built there. Essentia Health did kind of build on the promise of the city to extend the street. We're looking at some creative ways, hopefully, to accomplish the street.
And Mr. Vicenic, so the reason that you need to add these parcels to bring more increment into this TIF district is because of the roundabout?
The roundabout is one of the project costs. It's just the higher anticipated costs overall of the project. Yes, as I mentioned, the $1.8 million roundabout cost wasn't initially anticipated when the district was created.
And can you tell us again what buildings that you're planning on putting onto these parcels, or do you know?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The parcel that's shown, the right-hand side parcel, the one referenced earlier, the medical dental clinic, parcel that we'd like to add back into the district that was previously in the district is a medical dental office building. The two parcels that are located just adjacent to that on the left side of that insert is also another proposed medical facility.
And has anything been constructed there in the last 18 months?
No.
No?
The parcel on the right-hand side, the medical office building, was anticipated when we first did this district. They, too, wanted to locate along Isle Drive and were locating, waiting for the street to be completed. So they haven't pulled the trigger, I guess, on building until the street's being built, but now they're moving forward with their plans.
And can you also tell me, what was here previously that made this eligible for TIF districts? Is this a... No, this was the general jobs TIF, so this wasn't blighted or anything.
Correct. It was under the jobs bill, the economic development bill that created jobs.
Okay, thank you. Questions, members? Anybody else wish to testify? Thank you very much for traveling down. Thank you, Senator Rood. We will lay Senate file 2743 over for possible inclusion. If we have any questions, we'll be in contact. Thank you very
much.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair and committee.
Senator Hoffman has a scheduling conflict. Is he here? No. Senator Wickman?
Here.
Who's here?
Senator
Senator Reiner. Senator Reinhart, Senate File 2794.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, you'll recall a week or so ago, Senator Stump was here with a proposal crafted largely by the League of Minnesota Cities that talked about the issue of workforce housing. And my bill, 2794, is a variation of that proposal. This is a critical issue for us in the city of Duluth, largely because of very good things. And what we now have is a critical shortage of workforce housing. And what we've actually seen in Duluth is that that critical shortage of workforce housing is putting downward pressure on our affordable housing stock. We have folks in those units. You heard stories last time about people living in hotels for months at a time, which is accurate. But we also have people that are making, that have good jobs, making good incomes, living in what really are intended to be affordable housing units in Duluth because we don't have the workforce housing available. Now, I fully recognize, because I was in attendance at that meeting, that Senator Stump's bill did not get the warmest reception from committee, and it's not a bill that I was thrilled about either. So I give you, Mr. Chair, 2794 as a potential alternative. And this bill is essentially the exact same bill with three changes. And, Mr. Chair, I have two oral author amendments I would like to make.
Sure. Let's put the bill in the shape you want, Senator Reinhart.
The first is on line 4.14. This line talks about the vacancy rate. And I would like to, on line 4.14, strike 2 and insert 3.
So, Senator Reinhart's for taking 2% and moving it to 3%, or 2 years and moving it to 3 years? Percent?
No, just changing the 2% to 3%.
Okay. Senator Reinhart moves on page 4, line 14, strike 2 and add 3 to read 3%. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, aye. Same sign. Motion prevails. Amendments adopted. Senator Reiner.
And I have one other small oral, and that would be on line 5.21 to strike the rental and rental housing and insert workforce. So it should read financing costs for workforce housing.
Senator Reinhart moves on page 5, line 21, strike rental and insert workforce. Questions, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion avails. Amendments adopted. Senator Reinhart, got the bill in the shape you'd like?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, members, I'm not going to take a lot of time on this because we had a lengthy hearing on the general concept the other week, but I would highlight for you the three major changes. So the first is, and members, I'll be very honest, I was uncomfortable with this, the option in this bill that allowed for a 20-plus year TIF district. To me, that was, there is a need to incent. There is not a need to replace what private developers can do in these situations. You know, in our case, what we're seeing is a need to get some infrastructure in the ground. Those, if you've been to Duluth, which I know many of you have, and we appreciate, our tourism folks appreciate, you know, we're a city built on a hill with rock, clay, and steep slopes, and so site prep becomes a major issue. And those of us who live in Duluth have known for a long, long time that if a parcel has not been developed, there's a reason why. And so we now need to find ways to develop some of these parcels in order to create the necessary workforce housing. And so the shorter option made more sense to me. So this bill does three things. Number one, it strips out that longer-term option and leaves us with the 9-year option. Number two, as you all just helped me do, the original bill talked only about rental opportunities, and I've changed that to workforce. So that includes both rental and ownership. You will see if you come and talk to any of the real estate folks in Duluth, we have an absolute dearth in the middle of the housing purchase market. Things in the $250,000, $300,000 range just do not exist. You can find very lower end houses that need that are older and need a lot of work, and you can find some upper end houses, but what you can't find is the houses that probably many of us would be looking for if we were moving to a new community. So as you have new employees coming and living in hotels and thinking about staying and bringing their families there, they can't find an option that would be appealing in terms of a home life. And number three, members, I have experience in the both real estate and the rental market in Duluth. And the original bill talked about a vacancy rate that I felt was too high to really indicate a critical shortage. And, you know, the language on page four is meant to say this is a community that has a lot of good things going on. There's a low unemployment rate. There are people in the workforce part of the economy, and there is a critical shortage of rental housing. And so what my bill does is say, instead of what I consider to be a healthy rate, it clearly identifies a critical rate. You know, 3% or less vacancy means there are no vacancies, essentially. And that is what we're seeing in Duluth between a healthy college student population, which is great, and now hiring at AAR and Bar Engineering and our Ascensia and St. Luke's and just a lot of good things. We have really no market rate rental and very little market rate housing options. So this is intended to say we do know that there is an issue. A 20-plus year option is too much. This is a 9-year option that is very, very limited. That's my revision of that bill, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Senator Reinert. And I think that there's recognition of there's an issue. We are kind of searching around to find the solution at this point. And I think Mr. Halbach is going to join us to try to see if there's a mechanism that they have been working on to fill the gap that's still left after this. But Senator Rest.
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Reinert, what has been the vacancy rate in Duluth as compared to other regional centers? You know, Rochester, Mankato, whatever. What that also has a Moorhead that also has a major presence of higher education institution.
Senator Ress, I don't know. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Ress, I don't know in comparison to the other regional centers. I know that right now we're under 2%. It's about 1.9% vacancy rate.
I think that would be
Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Reinert, I think that would be helpful information if you could get that, from staff or whatever, wherever, of what regional centers would qualify for this, so we would know how extensive, and keep in mind, this is a burden on the taxpayers, how extensive the burden on the taxpayers throughout the state of Minnesota would be if we made a dramatic move, in my mind, to include tax increment, to include market rate housing as a legitimate tool for market rate housing. Still need to be further convinced.
Yeah. And Senator Reinert, would it be okay if we brought Mr. Halbach forward?
Absolutely.
To help us? I think there's been some conversations with him about work that he's been working on that might be helpful. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Chip Halbach with Minnesota Housing Partnership, and I'll be here again testifying on behalf of Senator Stumpf's bill. But just to let you know that the Housing Partnership has been in communication and conversation with many developers that do provide housing in greater Minnesota, and one of whom is here today, who is also going to be testifying on behalf of Senator Stumpf's bill. And we could say that As was mentioned and discussed at the last meeting and with Senator Reinert today, is across greater Minnesota. There is a critical need for workforce housing. And it's not just the private companies that are expanding. It's school districts, it's hospitals. It's a variety of organizations that are seeing their employees drive 30, 40, 50 miles to get to work because in these regional centers there's just not enough housing, and that the incomes of these individuals, it places them above what is considered the range of low-income housing and would be supported there, but of course not at the tier of needing luxury rental housing, or even there is in many cases a preference for rental housing as people move into these communities and find out how they fit with an employment. But the question that was asked had to do with the group and that is meeting. Well, actually, there's clusters of folks trying to figure this out. There are solutions at this point in terms of low-income housing. Now, there's inadequate resources to address that need, but this middle tier that Senator Reinert was speaking of, there really aren't good solutions. So we, in various convenings, we've discussed a range of options. And does the committee have a sheet that... on some numbers that was
I don't believe so. Oh, here it comes.
Thank you.
We have it now, Mr. Halbach, if you want to.
Okay. Thank you. I think I need a copy too. Good. What is on the face side of this page is an example taken from Greater Minnesota, which shows in a relatively inexpensive development that the cost, as you see, per unit runs about a little under $86,000 per unit. How the tax increment financing fits within the overall number of sources. And this one benefited from investor equity that, and again, it was taken from, abstracted from a model where there were individuals with corporation willing to invest. And it does include the 25-year TIF. So this is one that fit under the existing housing district construction so that you can bring here a little over $11,500 per unit to the to help fill a gap. And also, you could see that from the rents themselves, the rents, of course, pay for the operations of the property and as well then the banknote or the first mortgage. And if you, so from those rents, there's still a 29% gap, and about less than half of that is filled by TIF, so that it becomes a very important funding tool for this particular development. I'd come back to this, but I want to refer members to the flip side of this page. In here, in much simpler fashion, are earlier this year or late in 2013, we surveyed some developers who are considering projects across greater Minnesota and several of these communities and asked them what how TIF would fit into the developments they're undertaking. So we had a townhouse project planned for Plainview, which is outside of Rochester, and then less identified geographically, but for either something intended for the market in either southwest or northwest Minnesota, and then a property that's planned and actually underway in Duluth, and then one in Worthington. And you see that all of these, well, you won't see this, but I should say all of these developments worked into their pro forma, their development budgets, a attempt to try to have a 25-year TIF. And there, you can see at the bottom line of this, in terms of the gap that is there, that is what taking the development costs less what is paid for by the mortgages, that the 25-year tax increment district runs from a low of funding 12% of the gap in Plainview to the 34% in the model development for the western Minnesota, 30% in Duluth, 27% in Worthington. So the question then becomes, how do you fill the rest of that gap if these projects are going to move forward? And there I could say that developers have many, many approaches to that, including additional contributions by communities that have done donation of land. So in addition to a tax increment financing, they'll donate land. Companies have made donations too, ranging as much as $7,000 per apartment. The developers typically, when they go into these projects, will defer a good portion of their development fee because there's to leave that into the project as filling the gap, and that might run $6,000 per unit. And also then Greater Minnesota Housing Fund has been providing a lot of resources for workforce housing across Greater Minnesota. In fact, that is the reason they were created in the first place. In that, on a typical development, they would be investing about $8,000. So you start to stack up all of those resources to fill that gap from what the first mortgage will cover. And it takes a lot of creativity also on developers, and not every project can obtain a significant employer contribution or even a significant city contribution. But in all cases, the developers that I've talked to have said that the ability to get tax increment financing is critical in terms of building this layer cake of all of these gap fillers that they need to be able to produce this housing. And just in comparison to, I believe I mentioned this when I was here last time, that the 25-year tax increment district brings to a project about twice what the 8-year or 9-year with the extension district brings. So, for instance, in the Worthington project in the furthest right, it's almost $16,000 per apartment brought in by the tax increment district, which is 25 years. That would be about $8,000 per apartment if they had the 8-year district. And as someone who spends a lot of time trying to figure out how Greater Minnesota can meet their needs for their workforce, I can say that anything will be of value here. What Senator Reinert is proposing and what Senator Stumpf is proposing. But it's but the ability to utilize the 25-year tax increment district provides that much more resource and probably for many projects will mean the difference between going forward or not going forward.
And thank you, Mr. Halbach. And so I heard you, I'm not exactly sure of the math on that, but 8 years is half of what a 25-year would be?
Yes.
I thought it would have been about a third, but okay. So for Senator Reinert's bill, the gap grows more, but you still think it would be helpful?
Yes, absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Reinert, are tax abatements appropriate for these projects?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rest, I'll let Mr. Halbach jump in as well, but I don't think tax abatements give us the window that we want to have in terms of the revenue stream.
Mr. Halbach.
Well, I would... A tax abatement, you know, just as with Senator Reinert's bill, would make a contribution. And in terms of how it compares with the other approaches, including the 25-year tax increment, for instance, I would ask that you either save the question or ask Jamie Thielen from President of Sand Company come up, who has been utilizing these resources, can respond to that directly.
And I think we'll wait on that then, because we're going to hear Senator Stump's bill next because they're so closely related, and we can probably get to that question then.
In fact, Mr. Chair, I was going to suggest you probably excuse me and invite Senator Stump up, and Mr. Halbach can stay here because it's the same conversation.
Any other questions, members? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Reinert, and let's lay Senate File 2794 over for possible inclusion as amended. And Senator Stump, do you want to come up and let's hear your bill, Senate File 2541, which is very closely related to the issue of Senator Reinert's bill. And appreciate your work, Senator Stump. Senator Stump.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I do have a handout from Todd Peterson, who was here to testify the last time, but he's from Roseau, and it is a long drive for him, so he sent a letter that I'll share with you. I apologize that I was in a different committee and they wouldn't let me go as quickly as I wanted to get out of there. Senate File 2541 is a proposal that tries to again look at a little piece of how we might be able to fund or stimulate housing in many of these communities. And I think I mentioned this last time, housing is such an important ingredient in when you want to have economic development or keep people in those areas, that without it, our rural communities are not going to grow the way they could grow. We are trying desperately this session through a number of different mechanisms. One tool is obviously TIF. Another tool is to try to look at putting additional dollars into the housing area of the bonding potential and stimulating that. And I want to thank the many different partners that have been meeting on the housing. And I think that that's shows the importance around the state, not only in certain areas of the state, but now it's gotten so that it's almost statewide. The problem is statewide. And so I think it's vital to try to do something. So maybe I can ask... Mr. Aldrich, if he would just explain this version of how we would help, and it's a modest provision that I hope that we can see move forward. So,
welcome, Mr. Halbach, and help us understand the change, how eliminating the separate income requirements is helpful.
Yes, thank you again, Mr. Chair. And so basically, this provision takes the existing language of a housing district for tax increment financing and removes the distinction of the different income limits that are now in statute, one for rental housing and the other for ownership housing. And I think that there's two things I could say to that. One is that it is intended not to create a new structure for tax increment financing. So you have the existing structure here. And the other aspect to it is that it just recognizes that decisions made by the legislature some 20 decades ago, 25 years or so ago, which envisioned that if you had low incomes, you would be living in rental housing. If you had moderate to middle incomes, you would be living in ownership housing, no longer fits what's happening here in the metro area and in many greater Minnesota communities. There are many reasons why people with higher incomes would elect to live in rental housing. And so to have a different income standard and stipulation for ownership housing than you would for rental housing is something that might be, it reflects the past but not the present. And do members have the sheet? They do? Okay, so just Senator Stumpf had asked me to provide some detail to what is in the bill, which refers to these provisions of the Internal Revenue Code. And so that's what the handout here provides.
Mr. Halbach, is that the titled Income Limits Governing TIF Housing Districts?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Members, that's in your packet. Mr. Halbach.
Okay, thank you. So referring to that page, it just lets members know what referenced in the bill is Internal Revenue Code Section 143F. Which is current income limit for ownership housing, which is 100% of area median income for 1 to 2 person households, 115% for 3 or more. And at the bottom of the page, there's a table which for Roseau County and the metro area, you could see what the numbers are for these income limits, as well as the one that just follows on the page, which is Section 142D, which is currently used for the rental housing district, which is that a developer can elect to go for 20% of the apartments being affordable at 50% of median and below, or 40% at 60% of median and below. And so those tie state law to federal legislation used for different purposes, but it was seen as something that the state could refer to. So Senator Stumpf's bill does not make any change to that and just allows a community for an ownership district or a rental district to elect to follow either of those income standards. And as I mentioned before, the table at below shows what they are. And as you could see, for the rental standards, 50% of median or 60% of median, the dollar amounts are quite low. And whereas for the 100 or 115% of median, they're more of the middle-income range, and what is actually being paid, not just for one job, but for two income families in a number of these greater Minnesota communities that are raising the concern about the lack of workforce rental housing.
Mr. Halbach, would this change have an impact on the very low income rentals that the TIF was originally going to help? Would it have a negative impact on those?
Mr. Chair, it really wouldn't. And one of the biggest challenge we have for the low income is not the ability to use tax increment financing, which would still be there under this proposal. It just sets the ceiling higher, but you could still come in at lower. But it's the limitation on the amount of low-income housing tax credits that are available to the state, which uses those income limits also. So there's, you know, four or five times as much demand for those tax credits as there is supply. And that's the limit, the major limitation that we have on meeting the need of very low-income people. Now, Senator Stump's bonding bill also gets at the funding end of that and is very important for low-income households, and we greatly appreciate the work there and support that bill. This proposal does not diminish what can be done for low-income households, but it does provide a tool for a community to serve the higher income workforce need.
Mr. Chairman, I think one other thing is that by stimulating more rental housing, it'll open up opportunities across the board, both for the low income person as well as the medium income person. So I think it's the general shortage that's creating the pressure on all of our communities.
Senator Rest.
What, Mr. Chairman, thank you. What class rate would these units be? What property tax class rate? At what level would they be paying property taxes?
Mr. Halbach.
I'm assuming they're not D.
4D. Yeah. It would be the... And again, it sets the ceiling. If you were all the way up to the ceiling, that would be set. I believe that is your question, Senator. You would not be able to get that 4D tax rate. So you probably know the number 3C or something, or 4C, which is
that's what it would be. Would not be 4D. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is that correct? It's not 4D.
If you do not,
Mr.
yes.
Halbach,
thank you, Mr. Chair. If you do not have
Mr.
The
Halbach.
Other funding sources, such as the Minnesota Housing Challenge Program or the federal tax credits or other federal resources, then you would not have access to the 4D property tax rate.
Senator Stump, you have Mr. Thielen?
Mr. Stump.
Mr. Thielen.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Jamie Thielen. I'm CEO of Sand Companies. We're a real estate developer. We've developed constructed over 3,000 rental units, mostly in Minnesota, quite a few in greater Minnesota and in the metro area. And I just wanted to bring a little bit of the perspective on the developer side, because you hear a lot of people ask, well, there's demand, you know, supply and demand will equal all this out. And I just want to talk a little bit why, in this case, you know, we don't see certainly it happening, especially in some areas of greater Minnesota. When you talk, there's a number of factors that we look at as a developer of locating a project and are they going to be viable. And one of the big factors certainly is cost. You know, the cost of construction on an apartment project is probably 80 to 85% of the total development costs, you know, outside of the soft cost, land costs. And really the building cost in greater Minnesota versus the metro area is really the same. What you're paying for plywood, what you're paying for roofing materials is not that much different. There probably is a little bit of difference in labor costs. Certainly in the greater Minnesota areas, labor costs are a little bit less, but I wouldn't call it significant. One of the factors that a reason isn't significant anymore is because we have lost a lot of subcontractors over the number of years. We're doing a project in Roseau County right now, and I'm partnering with Polaris on 40 units in the city of Roseau. One thing we found there is just the lack of number of available contractors, which keeps up the rate of labor. From Maxfield's study, there are 42 permits in Roseau County in 2005 for residential permits. Since 2005, it's averaging only 8 per year. So all those contractors that were building all those homes, most of them have found other work and have doing other thing besides construction. So definitely keeping labor costs higher because of less contractors out there. The other big factor when you have costs is rental rates. These areas in northwest Minnesota, as particular, the rental rates are significantly less than certainly the rest of Minnesota. Right now, the average rental rate in Roseau County is $555, where in the state it's over $759. That's a 22% decrease or less in northwest Minnesota. So when you start talking about costs versus the rental income that you get, you see there's a huge gap, and that's really what we're talking about. To really make the projects work, the current rental rates are artificially low because there's not a lot of new product built. When you have existing apartments, you're probably increasing rent 2 or 3% per year. Well, that doesn't move rents a lot. There hasn't been a new apartment property in Roseau County since 2004, and the one prior to that was 1995. So you have artificially low rents in the market. Current rental rates in Roseau County of a one-bedroom is $528, two-bedroom is $575, and a three-bedroom is $652. To be able to make these projects work, you got to be at least $200 or $300 per unit higher to get them to financially perform for a developer due to the project. And certainly people in those areas, there's higher incomes because Polaris is paying a very good wage, so is Marvin. But the problem is, you know, for us as a developer, we can't go to a bank and say, hey, you know, we think we're going to get $900 a month for a three-bedroom unit when the market is only showing maybe $600. A bank is not going to finance that. So that's one of the challenges in the gap on the rental rates. The other thing in some of greater Minnesota areas, the units, the projects are quite a bit smaller. So you have one or two units with a vacancy. You know, that can affect the property significantly. And then in a lot of these communities, there's probably one or two large employers versus the metro area where there's a whole bunch. Now, you know, we're doing a project in Roseau, and hopefully, you know, Polaris maintains their employment, but if they have layoffs or close or they move, you know, all of a sudden we have some significant risk in those markets because there's not a lot of other options. But there is really significant demand in these areas, so there really needs to be some type of tool like this to be able to incentivize some of this development in those areas. Like I mentioned, we're partnering with Polaris on a project in Roseau. I was just at their headquarters just last month. They're in the process of a $4.6 million expansion. They have right now 90 open positions that they're trying to fill. And with a vacancy rate barely 2% in these areas, I can tell you, and there's no new development going on. There's not any places for these folks to live. I also met with Marvin Rindos a couple months ago talking about the same issue in War Road. There's just not available housing. And, I mean, these employers are extremely nervous. And, I mean, they're really frustrated about the lack of housing. And they're not in the housing business, so they don't understand. They're really looking for resources to help them. There's just my opinion. There's a real chance for these employers to stop their expansions unless we can solve that problem for them.
Thank you. Senator Rest.
Thank you. Two questions. One, there was an article in the some newspaper recently that one of the biggest problems in Roseau is the cost of flood insurance, and that The premiums are now $400 a month, and how does that figure in if people aren't going to buy houses in which they have to spend nearly $5,000 a year out of pocket for flood insurance?
Mr. Thielen, Senator Stump.
Mr. Chair, Senator Resta, I know in Roseau, I know where we're building our apartment project, it's not in the floodplain, but I know that's an issue in a number of areas in Roseau. My understanding that they actually have a flood diversion plan in place that they're getting ready to complete, which will make a difference there. But yeah, that is definitely another thing that, you know, drives potential cost, just operational cost, definitely.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. I notice in Section 2 you have a repealer of the 469.1761 sub 3, which is the income limits that are in Section 142 of the Internal Revenue Code. And I know that you reference it back up in 111 and 112. But one of the provisions in that repealer is that those income limits apply for the duration of the TIF districts. Is it your intention that the income limits that you're even setting up in Section 1 of the bill will not apply for the duration of the TIF district and only, as you put in there, initially occupied by people and after that, you know, sky's the limit?
Mr. Hallbarn.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ress, the short answer is yes, but if I can explain that this is, again, to put rental housing on par with ownership housing. And under existing Minnesota law, that is how it is articulated for ownership housing. There's no change there. That for tax increment district for ownership, it just says for the initial occupants. You know, if the legislature wanted to lower what the standard is for all housing, you know, I think that's a different conversation. But the current conversation is just to say whatever is allowed for ownership housing would be allowed for rental. And if I could just continue for 1 second here to respond more directly to Senator Ress's earlier question about property tax designation 4D. I do have the language here, which from Section 273.13, Subdivision 25, which is for 4D. It says the restrictions must require assisted units to be occupied by residents whose household income at the time of initial occupancy does not exceed 60% of the greater of area or state median income. So this will have, this proposal has no bearing on 4D, and if the household and the structure of the rent was such that required incomes to be under 60% of median, then 4D would be accessible to the property. If it doesn't have that, then it isn't 4D.
Thank you. Well, Senator Stump, another interesting proposal here. It's a major change from the original TIF ideas, and we're not exactly sure if it's going to raise enough money to fill enough of the gap to make the project viable, but I think we'll keep working on that. Any other questions, members? Senator Reinert.
Not a question, Mr. Chair, but just a comment that, you know, if the committee moves in this direction, I think we need to pair it with something else, because while I am supportive of this, it does only address rental. And at least in our community, that's only a part of the puzzle.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 2541? Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair, members, briefly, Dan Larson today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. And I just want to express appreciation for Senator Stump and the committee for listening to these concerns because they're very real. This is the first time that workforce housing has been a priority item for the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus. So it is indeed an issue that is very important to greater Minnesota and is a growing issue. So you've heard a number of proposals. I'm not quite sure how you're going to work through that, but we want you to continue working and hopefully at the end of the session have something that begins to provide some relief. So we appreciate the committee's effort and those of Senator Stump.
Thank you. Anything else, members? Thank you, Senator Stump. Senate File 2541 over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Mr. Halbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee.
And Senator Hoffman, did you have a scheduling issue that you needed to get moved up? Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, members, yeah, I another board meeting, so, and we'll be brief, Mr. Chair.
Hope. You can only hope. Welcome to the Tax Committee, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you for hearing Senate File 2387. With me today at the table is Anoka County Attorney Tony Palumbo. Mr. Chair, I've worked with Anoka County in bringing this legislation before your committee, and the content of Senate File 2387 has been approved by the Anoka County Commissioners as well as Anoka County Joint Law Enforcement Council. The section of law that we are proposing to change in Minnesota Statute 383E, which is a statute dedicated specifically to Anoka County. And as you know, several larger counties each have their own section of law. This is called the Public Safety Project. It's an innovative because it involves partnering by police, fire, and public safety entities from the various communities within Anoka County. By working together, each community can attain cost efficiencies and benefit from this partnership and also the partnership's economy of scale. I just want to address specifically the tax issue with the legislation. The county serves as a fiscal agent of sorts for the Joint Powers Board, thereby providing the property tax statements for Anoka County taxpayers to have a separate line for this public safety project. It's about $7 per year per home valued at about $200,000. This law was put into place a few years ago when local bonding was the usual method to finance these types of projects. Today, Anoka County is requesting just a simple wording change in order to have funding flexibility for this public safety project. Anoka County wants the flexibility to choose to either pay cash or bond for this annual payment. And there's an estimate from the Anoka County folks that say it would save up to $600,000 just in interest alone by not having to bond for this project. Mr. Chair, I turn this over to the Anoka County Attorney, Mr. Palumbo.
Mr. Palumbo.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. My name is Tony Palumbo, P-A-L-U-M-B-O, for the record. I am the Anoka County Attorney, but I'm here before you this morning in another capacity, which is Chair of the Anoka County Joint Law Enforcement Council. By way of explanation, the Joint Law Enforcement Council is a joint powers board. It was created in 1970 among elected officials in Anoka County, as well as police chiefs, other law enforcement, fire representative, and other county officials. 383E21, which is what Senate File 2387 is addressing, was passed a few years ago to allow for county bonding for the Joint Law Enforcement Council's public safety data system. This is a computer system which links the sheriff's office, our jail, 10 police departments, 15 fire departments, our emergency management department, and eventually the county attorney's office. It is designed to create efficiencies among all the users, as well as reduce input error, reducing what are called suspense files then. We want to make it far more efficient. Pursuant to the statute, the Joint Law Enforcement Council did approve this project in October 2013. Today's bill
would allow the county that flexibility, as Senator Hoffman has stated, to pay for this system either by bonding or by choosing to pay as you go or by a cash method. As chair of the Joint Law Enforcement Council, I am in support of Senate File 2387. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Senator Hoffman, we've been trying to figure out exactly why Anoka County has been asking for this. It doesn't increase the amount of funds available. It does clarify that they would carry a separate line on the truth in taxation and the property tax statement. And maybe for the county attorney, does this move the county then outside of any potential levy limit, or is there a levy aid impact with regard to county program aid that we need to contemplate if this change is going to occur? I mean, we're trying to figure out what the rationale for this is exactly, and maybe you can walk me through it one more time.
Mr. Chair and members, the answer to that is no, it doesn't. What we're specifically trying to do is there are other counties, the larger counties, that have a section of law as well addressing this. And this really was innovative because it addresses a gap in the data and the communication between the local enforcement agencies as well as the fire and any public safety that's in there. And so what we're asking for is just the flexibility instead of having to go after that and to pay the interest on it, rather they can pay as you go or pay cash or to bond for that. That's in a nutshell.
Senator Hoffman, instead of bonding, you want to levy annually for it. Is that what you're proposing?
So,
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman, so why does that have to be separate line on your tax TNT statement?
If
you can just... Do you not right now have the authority to levy for it within the county budget?
Mr. Palumbo.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, there is authority to levy certainly within the county. Originally, this bill was passed to a bond for 800 megahertz. Initially, and that was changed a few years ago to include this public safety data system. The feeling behind the language in the bill to not include it in the county's net debt was because the cities wanted to take the approach that this is a county-wide project rather than a county project. So the taxpayers would be paying for it anyway through a county-wide. That's why they wanted to separate it out, give transparency to the taxpayers to allow them to understand that when they are paying this particular tax, it is going to a county-wide system rather than an Anoka County system per se.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, so this authority they're asking for is simply communication, nothing more than that. That's one question. And then secondly, is this project part of Anoka County's capital improvement plan? It's a five-year plan, or what's the relationship between this project, either at its beginning or its reconfiguration in the language here? What's the relationship with that? And does this move it out of that so that you have more room within your CIP budget or what?
Mr. Palumbo or Mr. Inus, who prefers?
Communications, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Palumbo.
All right. If I can, Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, it is not part of the county's capital improvement project process. It is not part of that.
And it never was.
It never was.
Okay.
That is correct. Originally, when this statute was passed a couple of years ago, they contemplated bonding. They now want the option of not having to use bond to save $600,000. They wish the county, I believe, its philosophy is to try and reduce its borrowing debt as much as possible. And that's why they feel if they have the funds available, they would like the authority from the legislature to be able to pay it directly, because this statute is originally written contemplated bonding only. So now that we're coming forward asking, can we do it other than just bonding? And that's simply the purpose of 2387.
But so, Senator. Mr. Chairman, it's the authority to do pay-as-you-go that you really want, not necessarily some sort of I mean, separate line, an additional line on your TNT statement. I mean, that's just a communications device. There's no power in that other than communicating.
Mr. Chair,
what you really want is not to use bonding and to use pay as you go, and to make sure, and then separately to make sure people know that you're being good guys here, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, that is correct. We are. It's already in the existing statute that it is a separate line item. You are correct. It is just a matter of how to pay for it, and that is simply the purpose of 2387.
And Senator Hoffman, we're going to take a look and make sure this doesn't impact the levy plus aid calculation for county program aid. We're also going to take a look and see if there's a levy limit impact to this with public safety factor. But other than that, it seems reasonable. Any questions, members? Anybody else that wishes to testify? Mr. Ines, did you have anything to add?
No, I think all the questions were answered, Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hoffman. We will lay Senate File 2387 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Wicklund.
They didn't have any.
I think so.
All they had was last year's.
Too late.
Welcome, Senator.
Thank you, Terskoy. I'm here to present Senate File 2836. This is a bill that adds language to legislation that was passed in 2013. Due to the fact that that more information is available now on the plans to restore the old Cedar Avenue Bridge, it appears that that bids for restoration might come in slightly lower than originally thought. And so this language added in this bill would allow any of the remaining funds to be used for trails that are by the bridge. Trails and,
Senator Wicklund, do you have any idea? I mean, you mentioned that thought the bids might come in lower. How much money that might be?
I don't have that with me. I know that the design has been let, that contract. And I know they're working on the final bids. But from that, it appears that it's going to be less than they originally thought.
Senator Rest.
So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Wicklund, I think that's very important information for us to understand how overestimated that provision in last year's bill was. I mean, I think that just raises just a couple of red flags about the permissiveness of that language, that we really would like specific information, or I would at least, on how much money it is. I don't have any problem with the purpose or using the overage, but is it thousands upon thousands of dollars? And if so, then it seems to me that the city has some explaining to do about its miscalculations, and otherwise, seems to be okay. But how big a miscalculation was it, or what were the factors that made it come in under what they were budgeting? Was it labor costs? Was it lack of inflation? Was it, ready available of materials? What was going on that made the cost lower than what they had anticipated? If you could ask the city to provide that, I would appreciate it very much.
Sure.
Senator Wickman.
Sure, Scoy. Senator Rest, I do believe they would be able to provide, what are the factors. I don't think it's thousands upon thousands. I think it's a relatively small amount, but I can certainly find out where the difference came into play and how they got there. So,
that would be helpful. Anything else, members? Anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 2836? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Wicklund. We will lay Senate File 2836 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Chair and Committee.
Senator Rest.
How about Metzen?
His bill has an impact on your bill if your bill becomes into the bill.
Oh, that's right.
Bill
that's
not
right.
necessary.
That's right. Okay, I forgot about that.
Or we can do both. Senator Metzen here. Senator Metzen, I just wanted to mention that the reason we're doing Senator Rest's bill first is that if her bill was to go into the Senate tax bill, your bill would not be necessary or would be less of an issue. So, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senate File 2594 is once again an extension of the proposed extension of the five-year rule to an eight-year rule. In the bill that you have, it is a general law provision that would affect all tax increment districts. When we did the proposal a couple of years ago, last year we had we limited it to the longer districts. The redevelopment districts and so forth, and that is that's not what's in the bill. That's agreeable as an amendment, but I'm not going to offer an amendment this morning. I just want that general discussion to be on the table because we may need to do some more extensive revision of the proposal rather than just adding a restricting amendment. So I'm not going to do that, but that is certainly agreeable to the proponents of the bill, just like it was last year. And it's still an issue with a number of communities that had the unfortunate decision-making, timing issue with regard to when they certified tax increment districts during the recession, and some of them are still struggling. So with that, maybe we could just hear the testimony. I know that Senator Metzen's bill is about a specific community that would like that extension. If we were able to get the general law for those types of districts that I just described, his bill or his situation would be included in that. And I might point out that what we have done in the past on occasion is if there have been separate bills and we've put in a general law provision that if it ends up in the conference committee and we're asked by the other body to ratchet it back, that it is still possible to include specific communities and make it a special law rather than the general law. And I would certainly look out for that on behalf of Senator Metzen if that became the path we needed to follow. But obviously I hope that it's not, that we would be able to convince the House that this is still necessary for these districts and these communities, many of which are in the metropolitan area. And I would call on Ms. Nauman first.
Sure.
And then we have
and Senator Rest, if the testifiers could address, many of the requests are for a five-year extension of the five-year rule. This is a three-year extension.
That's correct.
And you did discuss the possibility of putting an end date at some point, a restricting end date that
we would have the possibility, or another thing, I don't have the amendment, but a possibility that we would limit the period, not just districts certified after 2007, but districts certified before, for example, June 1st of 2013, or so that there would be a definite period that we are focusing on for this help. And the reason why not putting it a date in the future would be so that we wouldn't have communities rushing to certify their TIFs districts. So we're really trying to help those that we're getting into trouble because of the recession in the last 7 years.
And Senator Rest, I know
and
that...
I do have also the community development director from Coon Rapids, but maybe we'll start with Ms. Nauman, if
sure.
that's
and
okay.
That's fine. And Senator Rest, I know you're not going to offer the amendment, but the amendment has been prepared. Would you have any thoughts about distributing it so people could just see
sure,
what we were contemplating?
That's fine. And it is the Mr. Sylvia can tell me whether it is the A1 or the A2 that limits it to the longer districts.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, it would be the A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment. The A1 amendment also includes that window through June 30th of 2013.
And so, Senator Rest, if it's okay with you, we'll pass that out
sure.
so that people can be aware of what we're contemplating.
Right. And we may go a different, you know, a different direction, which is why I don't just want that amendment to be on the bill. There may be some other limitations that we would be interested in. So I'm open to all of them.
Is that clear, members? Thank you. Ms. Nauman.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and I appreciate your time here today. I do want to let Mr. Novinsky talk about the Coon Rapids experience in Coon Rapids and to provide a sort of local perspective on this. But let me just say that the TIF extension that we are seeking and we sought last year has very much to do with the fact that many cities that did established districts during the economic recession just prior to or after and are still experiencing the effects of the recession have had a much more difficult time trying to get projects off the ground and to get developed as quickly as they might. I also want to add, and maybe this speaks to the potential amendment for limiting it to redevelopment districts, if I'm understanding that correctly, that those are the districts that we see from cities that do tend to take longer, both coupled with the recession and just the fact that redevelopment projects, especially if they are large projects, tend to take more time and generally that delays in those kinds of projects tend to be the rule and not the exception. And so I think we would really like to ask to have that be considered in terms of not just the time limits, but maybe also looking forward as we sort of contemplate the new new world that we live in with respect to economic development. So I did want to let Mr. Novinsky can talk
Thank
to you more locally about his experience.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Mr. Novinsky?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Novinsky. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Coon Rapids. And Ms. Nauman and Senator Rest asked me to just speak a little bit to provide you a little bit of context for some of this. In Coon Rapids, we're now a redeveloping community. Many of you may think of us as a growing community, but that day has passed. We're now into full redevelopment mode. We actually do have a project right now. We considered requesting some special legislation, decided not to move forward with that this year, but the project took a big hit during the recession. We had a developer all ready to go, and they came in one day and said, gosh, you know, this is about 2006, and they said, you know, we don't really like the direction the market's heading. We're a little worried. We're going to pull back. Maybe we'll be ready to do the project in 2008, and we all know how that turned out. So we are currently sitting right now with a site that's ready for redevelopment, but the market has just not taken hold in our part of the woods anyway. And you know, the clock is ticking on our TIF district. From a more broad perspective, I guess, you know, in general, as a redeveloping community, we're dealing with areas that were built out in the 50s, small parcels, kind of odd shapes. I preach to my council all the time that we need to be doing site assembly, and it's something that's in our comp plan and part of our policies that we are seeking to do site assembly. The need for this is really because small odd-shaped sites scare the heck out of the development community. They're complex. They take time. And the development world can go other places and find other projects that are easier and less risky. So it puts us at a little bit of a competitive disadvantage. trying to attract new investment into our community. The other factor, I guess, too, is that infrastructure projects over time, as roads are expanded, turn lanes are added, medians are put in place, often will impact parcels. Generally, I think we need a parcel that's in the neighborhood of 3 to 4 acres to see a redevelopment project. Up by Mercy Hospital, we recently had some investment that an old car dealer site that was about 3.5 acres, and we've now got a brand new 33,000 square foot medical office building on that corner, right next to it on an old Frank's Nursery site, similar in size, 3.5 acres. We've got 100 units of senior housing going up. Those were good-sized parcels in good locations. We really didn't have to do anything in those situations. But in other areas where takings for infrastructure has occurred, where we've run into contamination or other issues, where we've had to just do site assembly, and we don't have the power of eminent domain anymore. So it makes it really hard, I think, for cities to move forward and do site assembly or work with a developer to do site assembly. So we do need more time, I guess, is the point that I'd like to just stress. Adding this language in as we're trying to do redevelopment gives more time for site assembly, gives more time for us to deal with some of the unanticipated things that come up when you're doing redevelopment. Contamination, title issues. We're neck deep into some title issues coming across old railroad right of way, and things that weren't quite recorded right and are now creating problems. So it all delays the process and makes this just take more time. And TIF is really the main tool that we have now as we try to pursue redevelopment and work with the development community. So with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Thank you. Questions, members? Seeing none, anybody else wish to testify on Senate File 2594? Anything else? Oh, Mr. Carlson? No. Anything else, Senator Rest?
Mr. Chairman, and I'll work with the advocates for this with regard to the sunset date.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Rest. We will lay Senate File 2594 over for Ms. Snowman. Did you have something you wanted to add? We'll lay Senate File 2594 over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Senator Metzl.
Thank you very much, Chairman, members of the committee. Senate File 2573, I think mirrors quite closely to what Senator Rest is trying to do. This is for the city of Eagan. Our district was certified in 2009, right at the beginning of the recession, and we are asking for the five-year rule to be extended. And we've got, this is a Cedar Grove development area, and of course the whole economic development stuff halted there for a period of time, and we just couldn't move forward, so we're asking for the additional time. It was no fault of the cities or anybody else that I guess the economy kind of went sour, but this would give us that additional 5 years to complete that 51-acre site in Eagan, which is a huge, and we've got a developer ready to go, but we do need this extension. So I have Mr. John Hoyenstein, the Director of Development from Eagan here, answer any further questions, but again, I think you've had a few of these in the past that are asking for extensions just because of mainly because of the recession. So we are moving along, and we can get this 51-acre site developed if we were allowed to go the extension.
And Senator Metzen, you heard the Senator Rest bill. That is a 3-year extension, not a 5-year extension. Perhaps you or your testifier could address that.
Mr. Orenstein might answer for the city.
Mr. Orenstein?
Hohenstein.
Hohenstein.
Mr. Chair, members of the council or committee, my name is John Hohenstein. I'm Director of Community Development for the City of Eagan. And while we would ask for 5 years, if 3 years is what's available through the general bill, we would be pleased to have that as well. The project's ready to go. It has all of its approvals. The one thing that McGough has not been able to do is find a tenant in order to start the project. And while many costs have already been expended and repaid by McGough, our development agreement with them would be to provide some additional TIF assistance for extraordinary costs. As Mr. Nowinski said, some of these sites are the most difficult. There's a reason they didn't develop before or develop their highest use. This one has special topography and so on, where a level of assistance will certainly make the project more suitable to the site. It's a 35E and 494, an extraordinary location when the market's ready. We would like to have the ability to assist the developer going forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And Senator Metzen, I think Senator Rest indicated in her testimony that if we do move forward with the general law change and are not able to successful with the House with that, we certainly would bring your individual project forward at a later date. So we'll see where this goes. And
probably, Mr. Chairman, members, is probably the nicest corners left in the Twin Cities. It's just remarkable corner out there. And so it's going to get done. We need this help, you and the committee members, to get this extension.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, members? Seeing none, anybody else wish to testify on 2573? Seeing none, thank you, Senator Metzen.
Thank you.
We will lay Senate file 2573 over for possible inclusion. I know the division is meeting tomorrow, Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Division is meeting tomorrow. Full committee on Thursday. Thursday's agenda is Saxhog has a series of electrical generation, pollution control, other issues relating to electrical generation. Senator Dahl, Senate File 1958. Senator Carlson, 1595. Senator Jensen, 2399, Rosen, 2171, and Senator Eaton, 2581 on Thursday. Seeing nothing else, committee's adjourned.